Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Well, hello again. Delighted to have your company for another edition of The Tottenham Way. Last week, of course, we were coming to terms with the Champions League exit that followed hot on the heels of that FA Cup shocker in Sheffield. Sorry to mention that again. Since then, Spurs have won in the league to capitalize on Liverpool's surprise setback at Bournemouth. Richarlison has all but finally scored in the Premier League, but we are no nearer to knowing for sure what is going to happen regarding Antonio Conte, irrespective of whether Spurs finish in the top four. It's a 99.9% certainty that he is going to leave at some stage. If and when he does, well, as discussed last week, several names are in the frame. Now, the ones I've heard so far with varying degrees of raised eyebrows are Thomas Tuchel, if we finish in the top four, Luis Enrique, Marco Silva, Ruben Amorim of Sporting Lisbon, Roberto De Zerbi, Thomas Frank, Steve Cooper, Ange Postecoglou of Celtic, Christian Gross. Okay, that's a joke. He was in the frame, but apparently he's lost his Oyster card. And of course, Maurizio Pochettino. I'm Marcus Buckland. With me, as always, Dan Kilpatrick of the Evening Standard, Tom Barkley, The Sun, and Tom Allnut of The Times. So, guys, the big questions: what do Spurs really need as far as this next appointment is concerned? We're talking about style, silverware, keeping Kane, being able to work with a limited budget, presumably, being able to get on with Fabio Paratici, a willingness to embrace youth, and perhaps as important as anything, the ability to be ruthless with those in the squad deemed to be dead wood. And if it is to be Poch again, well, what went wrong first time around? Was it his fault? And how relevant is the adage, never go back? Dan, plenty to sift through. With your ear so firmly to the ground, what's the current vibe? What's the latest you're hearing inside N17?
Hi, Marcus. Well, it's the same, really, as last week. I don't think anything's changed after the Forest game. I don't think there's much to take from that game, really. I think it was the perfect game for Spurs. You could not have picked a better fixture of any in the league, apart from maybe Man City at home, and then Forest at home, because they're so poor on the road and they really offered no resistance. So I don't think we can read, you know, a great deal into that game. And I think it's as you were, really. It was funny, we were all, me, Tom B and Tom Allnut, were all in the mix zone after the Forest game. And I got in the huddle and said, you know, did we go a bit strong on Conte last week? Because you look at the table and the fixtures and suddenly, you know, you wonder if Spurs could kind of stroll to fourth place, just given Liverpool's inconsistency and Newcastle's struggles and the kind of fixture list of all three clubs. Although we shouldn't forget Brighton. But Spurs have been, you know, doing that to us all season, I suppose. You know, you think they've turned a corner. You think it's going to be smooth sailing from here, and it hasn't been on any occasion. So I think Conte's situation is still much the same. You know, he feels like a dead man walking. He's almost certain to leave at the end of the season, if not before. It depends on Spurs getting in the top four. At the moment, they're looking well placed to do that. But let's see where we are, you know, after the game against Southampton, because it could all change again.
Yeah, I went to the Forest game. Actually, yeah, it was a perfect fixture in so many ways. But Spurs almost managed to make a real dog's dinner out of it. Had Forest scored that penalty with a minute or two still to go, I mean, it would have been a horrendous last 90 seconds. And again, for me, the lack of flexibility, the fact that Conte didn't make any changes until towards the end. I found it all quite an underwhelming experience. Tom B, why is he still there? As Dan has just said, he is a dead man walking.
Hi, Marcus. Well, first of all, on that performance, just your sort of summary there, I'm not sure I felt the same way. I know there was obviously a penalty late on, but I don't think it was really ever in doubt. And it was quite a convincing performance, really, from Tottenham, albeit, you know, as Dan said, Nottingham Forest kind of rolled over from the off, which was a very strange approach, given the confidence in the Tottenham camp. You think it would have been a better to get in their faces from the beginning, but they didn't. And why is Conte still there? Well, I think a couple of reasons. First of all, not to say that he wouldn't have been sacked given what he's been through, but I do think what he's been through personally, having been off recovering back in Italy for the last month or so, means that, I don't know, maybe he gets a bit more grace because of it, and perhaps rightly so. I mean, this is a man who did rush back way too early after, what was it, 10 days after having surgery, and which as we reflected and what happened subsequently, was clearly too soon. But probably the main reason is the fact that the way the club are weighing it up is, right, what's left to go at this season? It's to finish in the top four. If they suddenly get into a position where they feel that Antonio Conte being there is going to hinder rather than help that goal, then yes, they may take action. And we were really, really waiting to see what would happen from this Nottingham Forest performance, whether the crowd would turn, given the comments he made in a very explosive press conference where he criticised them for having no patience, run out of patience. Didn't really get a chance, really, the fans to express any kind of disquiet, because the game was kind of over so quickly. Having said that, it was still quite a muted atmosphere, I thought, throughout most of the match. But back to what Dan said, I mean, we sort of go from game to game at the moment. And if at Southampton it's a disaster and things change, then you could see things changing. But at the moment, they're in actually a really good position. Take away the disaster of the FA Cup in particular and the Champions League exit, their form in the league is actually not too bad. Was it 5 wins in 7? Not too bad. That's actually very good, even if the performances, as they have been all season, have been nowhere near sort of, I want to say good enough, but just sort of exciting the crowd and winning anyone over. But if they're in this position with a sort of favourable fixture list and they feel they can keep getting results, and that's really your answer of why he's still there.
And Tommy, two things that I want to ask you. I mean, this is not easy necessarily, but I was pleasantly surprised, I have to say, that Richarlison started at the weekend, bearing in mind what he'd said after the European game. And I thought, Conte being Conte, he'll take umbrage to that. And Richarlison might be lucky to get on the pitch again this season. So I don't know what we read into that. And also, reading what you guys have all been writing so brilliantly, of course, over the past few days, I'm getting the impression that we've been given a bit of a coochy, softy feel. And this was Dan's recommendation last week. I think the PR exercise to see Conte go is to say that Conte doesn't want to upset the club because he's very appreciative of how they've dealt with him during his illness and the sad loss of his friends, and vice versa. So two different strands there, but I wonder if potentially both of those are significant.
I think on Richarlison, it was really interesting because in a way it felt like Conte was saying, okay, you've done your talking off the pitch, now go and do it on the pitch. It was almost like a bit of a challenge, really. Go and prove it, go and show us that there's some substance behind the words. And I think, to be fair, I think Richarlison played pretty well. I mean, I kind of wrote about him at the weekend. I thought he was the sort of standout story, if you like. I wouldn't say player, because obviously Kane was there and playing brilliantly as always, but he was the standout performance, I think, of the match. I thought he played really well. And that does kind of create, the possibility that Richarlison could possibly play more in the next coming weeks. I think Son also played well, ironically, at the weekend. I guess in answer to your question about sort of the kind of PR thing, I mean, I guess it suits both parties right now. I think whilst Spurs are winning and playing quite well, I think it suits both to kind of keep the status quo, everyone to kind of just keep a kind of professional relationship, as it were. I do think it is a genuine feeling that Conte has, that he feels he was so well supported by the club, by the hierarchy, that he doesn't want to throw that back in their faces. But I do also think that there is a kind of an equilibrium right now that can be maintained, but it feels very fragile. I think they played well against Forest, they won, the other results went their way. I think Liverpool not winning in the early kickoff made a big difference to the atmosphere at the ground. Everyone sort of thought, oh, actually, blimey, like, maybe we could still finish fourth here. And if that kind of continues, then I think it suits everyone just to kind of plod along until the summer. If they can take fourth, then great. And that's a much easier, calmer way forward than ripping everything up with, you know, 2 or 3 months to go and having to find a coach in a week and that kind of thing. So I think if they can, they will keep going. But I don't think it would take very much for them to have a rethink.
Okay. Well, there is plenty for them to think about. And ultimately, the next manager is going to have to tick a number of boxes. But which boxes does Daniel Levy and Fabio Paratici see to be the most important ones? Is it style of play, personality, experience? I mean, Dan, the checklist, what are the top three priorities as far as the Tottenham hierarchy are concerned?
Well, I mean, the first thing to say, and we touched on this last week, is who's going to pick the manager? You know, that's the first thing to decide. And you mentioned Paratici there. His future is obviously very uncertain. As well as Conte's. He is facing this court case, this appeal in Italy, which could determine whether he's allowed to work in Europe. And there's a second case that's pending at the moment that apparently, you know, just from what I'm hearing and what people are saying, you know, could be even more difficult for him. So, yeah, he's obviously in a pretty difficult position. And you know, what we're told is that he's the one who's drawing up the shortlist, you know, succession planning at the moment, which is obviously his job as a sporting director, but that may require a rethink. And I'm sure Levy is doing his own planning and research behind the scenes. So we might have a situation as Spurs did in the summer when Nuno came in, of having kind of two shortlists. I mean, that summer, if you remember, there was a Steve Hitchin shortlist at the start of the summer, which was replaced by the Fabio Paratici shortlist. From about June, mid-June onwards. So we could have a similar situation again where, you know, Levy's got his thoughts, Paratici's got his thoughts, and we don't really know which direction this is going.
Well, and Nuno comes back at the end of it all, does he?
God forbid. In terms of the qualities, I mean, Spurs have to decide, you know, what type of manager that they want. They've obviously tried to appoint you know, a certain type of manager twice in Mourinho and Conte. You know, I think a Mourinho-Conte figure is absolutely the wrong type of manager for Spurs, and that's now clear and should be clear to everyone. You know, I think the position Spurs are in, even since moving to the stadium and starting to spend more money and compete with their rivals, is that they're always going to need a project. They're always going to need to build to success. I mean, I said last week, I don't think win-now managers really exist anymore. You know, even Guardiola and Klopp needed time to win the title. At kind of super clubs. So Spurs are certainly going to need someone who is prepared to take a medium-term view, who's going to promote youth. I do think results are the most important thing, obviously, but clearly style goes a long way at this club. You know, it has done for historical reasons, and it will continue to do, I think. And I think if Conte was in the position he's in now, even having gone out of both cups, but Spurs had played kind of front foot, passing football and got on the ball and looked to entertain for most of the season, the mood would be completely different today. So you asked me for three. I will give you two in promoting youth and style of play. And I suppose the third is being willing and capable of taking a medium-term view. I hate to bring him up, but I... spoke to Mikel Arteta this week for work, and he, you know, he talked about having five phases at Arsenal, and he said he's only in phase three at the moment. You know, and given that they're very likely to win the title this year, you know, that gives you an idea of the kind of planning he's done. Spurs need someone who's going to come in and you take a view and have phases and stages that they want to build through, like Pochettino did.
Yeah, I think with Arteta, phase four is to get a personality, and phase five is to change his hairstyle. But we don't want to talk too much about him. Tom B, priorities for you, for whoever does come through the door after Conte?
I mean, a lot of what Dan's just said, obviously, but I think just one of the key things, sounds obvious, but is an obvious desire to be there, to want to really embrace what Tottenham is, where they are, where they want to go, and to be all in on that. Obviously, if anytime anyone could level that criticism at Conte, he would refute it completely. But it is something that's just come up time and again from the fans, a frustration that they don't feel like he's really in it for the long haul. And obviously, we know where we're at now, but that's been a problem throughout. And I think partly why so many fans have had enough. I do think the style of play has been a big part of it, but I think it was kicked off by the fact that they didn't really feel like this guy really wanted to be here for the long term, which as a fan can feel quite insulting, because obviously the club is something that means more to you than a lot of things in life, and to have someone
Tom, let's be honest about it.
Absolutely. And to have someone who's driving it not feel obviously not even close to the same way, but to not even really feel like he or to give the impression anyway that he wants to be in it for the long term can really frustrate fans. Again, I'm sure Conte would push back on all of that, but I do feel like that is a key factor to whoever they appoint next, and kind of why, as Dan's already said, that I'm not sure about win now managers anyway, but having a big personality, someone who's done a lot in the game, they have tried that. And that's not to say that wouldn't work. You know, I'm sure we'll talk about someone like Luis Enrique later, and he would, if for my mind, fit into that Mourinho Conte kind of elite level, massive world famous name who's done huge things in the game. And maybe he would be up for it for the long term. And if so, that could really click. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why maybe that wouldn't on the face of it, but maybe that would. But personally, I think someone who is more up and coming, who really can embrace where Tottenham are and when they want to take them, would be, for me, along with the things that Dan's mentioned and the style of play, really top of the shop.
Tom, just before I come back to you, I need to issue an official apology and correction to my wife and two sons. I will be cancelled in my own household if I don't actually reiterate that as important as Spurs are to me, of course, they are more important. Let's just hammer home that particular priority. Okay, thank goodness for that. Tom, yeah, I mean, but different. We spoke last week about, you know, how important is the style of play and the bottom line. I think for most fans, yeah, it's nice. But if you win silverware, that's all that really matters. So there's constantly this slight conundrum, is there not, in terms of who will correctly fit the bill?
Yeah, I mean, I always think the style of play thing is a little bit of a, I think it's a bit of a misnomer. I always think people sort of, it's something people fall back on when the results are going badly. It's sort of like the results are bad, and also look at the football, it's terrible, you know. Ultimately, if you're winning, and you know the results are good, people don't mind so much about the style, you know. I mean, even Barcelona are currently top of the table in La Liga, being managed by Xavi, the kind of, you know, the poster boy of tiki-taka, and they're basically playing 1-0 football, and everyone is pretty happy because they're 9 points clear of Real Madrid, you know. And I think, yes, style is important, but it's almost more important when you're losing, you know. I mean, I personally think the one thing that the next manager for Spurs has to have is connection. Like, I really think there has to be a connection again. I think everyone remembers Pochettino for the, you know, for the Champions League final and the, you know, the title challenges and Dele Alli and Harry Kane, etc. But actually, the one thing I think that really marked out the Pochettino era versus all the other managers really that have been around at Spurs in the last 10, 20 years was connection. Like, I really think he had that connection with the fans. He was able to kind of speak the Tottenham language, you know, and whether that was about promoting youth team players, it was the way he spoke about the club, it was the way he celebrated, it was the way he, you know, talked about Harry Kane, all of these things, you know, he felt like someone who had somehow come through the club, you know, someone who understood what the club was all about. I know a lot of that sounds kind of cliche, that every club kind of talks about these things, but by the end, Pochettino did feel like a manager that, you know, had really become part of the fabric at Spurs. And I think the problem they have with Mourinho and Conte after these last two managers is that ultimately everyone knew that both of these managers weren't part of the fabric at Tottenham. Everyone knew that from the start these weren't kind of Spurs managers. But if they win trophies, then, you know, maybe it's kind of worth it. And I think now it's almost a problem, I would say, that Daniel Levy has. There's such a craving now for connection that there's a danger that it almost clouds the sort of the real important stuff as well. And that's the one thing I think now is that there could almost be a backlash against the kind of Conte Mourinho type, whereby they go for Pochettino just simply because they want the connection and the emotion back. And I would almost understand that, because that is what the club now really, really craves. I guess what they really have to be careful of is that that's not just the only thing they go for. They marry kind of finding someone who is part of the feeling and the emotion of the club with also making a smart and clever appointment. I think it is the most, I don't know if I'm kind of contradicting myself, but I think it's the most important thing initially. But I also think that in a year's time, they have to make sure they got the right guy. But ultimately, that is the kind of legacy of Conte and Mourinho, is that the fans feel now, the club feels now, they need someone that feels the club again, that feels like they understand what Tottenham is.
Just another point that I think is important, and I do think is a fair criticism of Conte's time, is I think a manager who improves players is really key. I don't think that Conte has improved many players during his time. I'm trying to think of any really that have kicked on and gone to another level. I mean, I maybe would have said Son if you'd asked me the back end of last season, but obviously we know what's happened to him this season. And whilst I understood the idea of getting in Conte when he did, because you had two world-class players coming to their peak years and you needed to capitalize on that, we're now at a phase where there are doubts whether Son could recapture that form long term, and obviously doubts over Harry Kane and his future going forward. So I think we're going to go back to where Tottenham have been, particularly during those Pochettino years, of signing younger players with potential and developing them and making them better. And during Conte's time, he has had some young players, and I think you can make cases for a few in fits and spurts. Like, I feel like Ryan Sessegnon was coming on quite nicely, and then his progress seemed to stall. I don't think there are really any overwhelming successes. I mean, even Kulusevski had a great introduction for a young, forget how young he is, but this season sort of tailed off as well. So if Tottenham are always likely to go to be in that, whilst they're an elite club, then they're never going to be the spending power of a Chelsea, of Man United. So they will always be looking for those younger talents to develop and take on to that next level, which is what I presume they'll go back to. So I think it's really important that they have a coach who both buys into that and has a track record of making players better.
I guess you could throw Oliver Skip in. I mean, he's been injured, but he's come back and he's looking good again. And he's certainly going to get plenty of chances, I think, between now and the end of the season. Dan, let's go on to Pochettino before we then just run the rule over two or three of the more likely other candidates as well. With the benefit of hindsight, was it right to sack him when the club did?
I mean, you could ask me this at any point since November 2019, and I might have given you a different answer, I think. But it's kind of increasingly clear now, I think, that it was probably a poor move. Certainly, it was a poor move to replace him with Mourinho. I mean, I don't think Spurs should have sacked the guy who predicted everything that was happening and has happened since. You know, plainly, that person did not deserve to lose their job for warning the club what was going to happen and being proved spectacularly right. I think the question with Pochettino is whether, even though he had been proved right, once he had got to that point, whether it was salvageable, whether he still had the fires burning brightly enough post-Champions League final to build another team, to start another cycle. I think that's the question. I mean, obviously, Levy should have backed him and bought players for him in the previous two, three summers and refreshed the team as Pochettino wanted. That was the big mistake. I'm not sure sacking him when we got to that point was as big a mistake because, as I said, the question was whether he could kind of go again. And I do think managerial cycles tend to be pretty short now. You know, 5 or 6 years is a decent innings, unfortunately, in the modern game. Potentially kind of seeing that at Liverpool now, for example, of Klopp kind of struggling to kind of recapture the old magic and potentially having to, you know, either start from scratch or part ways with Liverpool. So, Poch has been proved spectacularly right, and the decision to replace Mourinho and then subsequently appoint Nuno and Conte, you know, they've all been disastrous decisions. But I do think there is a question over whether it was completely wrong to get rid of him when Spurs did, just given his mindset, the club's mindset, and the relationship between the two.
Tom, you gave me real food for thought just a few moments ago when you quite rightly suggested that the danger here is that Spurs will go for somebody like Pochettino because they need the contact. They need to make the fans feel as though we're all united again. And that initially will make sense, but if it doesn't work out, it certainly won't. So ultimately, having given us that little quandary, yes or no for Poch 2?
I find this difficult to answer because I really think that in some ways, Pochettino represents something which is what football is all about. You know, for Spurs fans, this is what it is. You know, it's like I say, it's connection, it's feeling again, it's like a sense of identity, of pride, and all that matters a lot. You know, I don't think winning cups and titles and everything, it's important, but for a club like Spurs, I don't think it is the be-all and end-all. Ultimately, the reality is Real Madrid are going to win the Champions League, Manchester City are going to win more Premier Leagues, you know, like, in a way, sometimes it's the way that you do these things, it's the trajectory that matters most. So in that sense, I can see that Pochettino is actually, I could 100% understand if Daniel Levy appointed him, and I could understand if people were extremely happy about it. I personally think the best way for Tottenham to become a better football team is probably to go in a different direction now. I just think that, I don't know if it hasn't been long enough or if it's been too long, but I just feel like this team that Spurs have now doesn't quite match up as well to Pochettino as it did maybe 10 years ago. And I think it's entirely possible as well that Pochettino is a different coach than the one he was when he came in 2014. You know, I think he'll be wanting different things, and I think maybe Spurs will as well. And I just think that there's probably better options right now. But that is the kind of the sort of pragmatic black and white answer. I think maybe the more sort of fun answer is that Pochettino coming back would be great. It would be great for the club, be great for the fans. And maybe that is what everyone needs.
I think kind of funnily enough, maybe this is kind of wishful thinking on my part, but I think there's almost a sense that Poch, in some respects, is in a sort of unique position of being able to tick the boxes of what the club needs right now and what Daniel Levy will want, in that clearly he is a manager with a great track record of promoting youth. He plays in the right way. He's got the connection that we've talked about. But also I think Levy has shown with the appointments of Mourinho and Conte that he does want a big name manager. You know, people have kind of accused Spurs of being Chelsea light over the last few years. And I can understand that. You know, Levy wants someone who's going to come in, be a big personality, be a commercial draw for the club. So, and Pochettino ticks those boxes. You know, he's a big name manager across Europe now. He's got to the Champions League final. He's managed PSG. You know, he's managed two of the last World Cup winning captains, Hugo Lloris and Lionel Messi. But he's also got this reputation for promoting young players, coaching players, improving them and playing good football. So I sort of see how you can make him work from both those angles. And it's quite hard to find another manager where you could say he ticks all these boxes, but he's a big enough name to be a kind of draw for leaving the club.
But Dan, the one thing you've told us in the past is that if Pochettino comes back, it's going to be a big problem for Paratici to have a director of football. I mean, my immediate comeback to that is, with all due respect to Paratici, bearing in mind everything that's going on in the background and the fact that his big strength was his unity with Antonio Conte, why is it felt that Paratici is so important? Because you'd have to suggest that a lot of the players he's brought in have not exactly been overwhelming successes.
Well, I push back on that. I think he's done very well in the transfer market. Kulusevski, Bentancur, Romero, all very good-looking signings at really good prices. Porro is looking like it could be another one. So I think he's generally found some really good players in that market that Spurs are shopping in, which is obviously below the cities and Chelsea's and kind of above the sort of 20 million mark. Yeah, I take your general point. I mean, I think if you're giving most Spurs fans a choice between Pochettino and Paratici, there's only one winner, and Paratici's future is very uncertain. So yeah, I don't see Pochettino coming back if Paratici, you know, wins his appeal and the other case is dismissed and doesn't go to court. I think he will then take the lead and pick someone else. But as I said, this is another area of uncertainty about Spurs, you know, among many. And we just have to wait and see what's going to happen there. And if Paratici did have to step aside, then I think that increases the likelihood of Poch coming back.
On Pochettino, I'm all for it. You know, obviously the romance of it is very attractive, particularly from a journalist point of view. But yeah, we've outlined a lot of the reasons why he would fit. But I do think when you look back on his time things have changed. A lot of the problems that were there before during his time have changed. I do think the lack of investment was clearly an issue, but personally, I don't think you can criticise the club for the lack of investment the last year or so. Spent, what, nearly 170 million on new players. I guess you could argue how many of them have been good signings. I think there's a lot of caveats to all of them, really. And in more than one season where it's been interrupted by a World Cup to really judge whether they have been good signings or not. But the point is that they have spent that money. So that should be less of a problem. And even on that, I mean, I know I said before I was listening to Guillaume Balague's book about that 2016-17 season, still listening to it at the moment. And it seems like Pochettino often brings up the fact that he tells Daniel Levy that he's not all about signing players. Often it's better to promote a player from the youth system rather than dip into the transfer market. So I wonder how much of it was partly him as well, not wanting to do it. But I also think, you know, I seem to remember quite a bit of an unhappiness perhaps from certain players feeling that they needed to move on. I remember Danny Rose's interview with The Sun, which didn't go down well at all with the club, where he pointed out a lot of feelings within the dressing room. I don't really see there being the same kind of issues at the club at the moment, apart from the Harry Kane situation where you were wondering whether he will sign a new contract or not. So I do think that kind of desire within the dressing room is different now compared towards the end of those days at Pochettino. So I do think that's a point. But also, what's quite exciting, even if you're Poch in or Poch out, is you look at the list and there are so many good managers that could be either literally available because they're not in a job or you'd think would be at least interested in having a conversation about Tottenham. And you couldn't have said that in the summer after Mourinho left. So it could be very exciting, whatever the outcome ends up being.
Well, I listed several of those names at the start of the show. We're going to narrow it down and I'm going to get you three to each give the pros and cons on one of, I think, the three front runners. Now, Thomas Tuchel has sort of indicated that if Spurs finish in the top four, he might be interested. But reading between the lines over the past 24 hours or so, I'm not sure that he is one of the front runners at the moment. And the fact that he's an ex-Chelsea boss doesn't help as well. I mean, if Christian Gross does find his Oyster card, then obviously he might spring to the top of the list. And I believe he's searched everywhere around his house to try and get it. But if that doesn't happen, sadly, we won't get Gross part two. It seems to me that maybe the three front runners, and one of them does surprise me, in Marco Silva, who's had a mixed career. We know what a talented manager he is and how well he's doing at Fulham. Roberto De Zerbi, who has worked wonders since going to Brighton. And I saw an interview with him yesterday where, first of all, he said he was very happy at the way Brighton were playing. Then he said he was very happy to be linked with Spurs because it meant he was doing a good job. So he's a happy man, whatever. And we touched upon Luis Enrique as well. So, Tommy, Enrique, the pros, the cons, and the percentage likelihood of him taking over, in your opinion?
I think Luis Enrique would be a really exciting appointment for Tottenham. It definitely wouldn't be boring, is the first thing to say. Luis Enrique, I don't know how many people sort of, how familiar they are with him, really. I mean, he's almost a bit sort of like Van Gaal-esque in his personality, like very eccentric, massive believer in all of his own ideas, really doesn't care what anyone else says, to the point where sometimes you wonder if he does things just to kind of, just to be contrary. He's got no respect or admiration for the press. He's a very forthright, charismatic coach. He's played attacking football his whole career, big believer in 4-3-3. Got a fantastic record with bringing through youth players. I mean, blimey, when he was in charge of Spain, he gave a debut to Gavi, for example, when he was 16, and he'd barely played for Barcelona, and everyone in Spain was sort of saying, why on earth are you calling up this teenager? It was almost like a sort of a bit of a moral question. People were saying, you know, is it all right to call up a guy this young? And Gavi was man of the match on his debut, you know, and he brought through Pedri as well. I mean, he's a massive believer in young players. I think he ticks a lot of boxes. I've got to say, I really think he ticks a lot of boxes for Tottenham. Obviously, the one thing is, how can he adapt to the Premier League, to English football? You know, he hasn't got that kind of record in the Premier League that, for example, Pochettino has, Silva has, Tuchel has. You know, there is a leap there. But in terms of him as a coach, I think he ticks a lot of the boxes that Tottenham are looking for. He's definitely high up Paratici's list. And I think for all the uncertainty around Paratici's future, his judgment and his scouting ability is still very highly respected at Tottenham. That's what people say, is that even if Levy is going to have the final word on this appointment, which I think is the case, I still think Paratici's opinion is going to be listened to. And if he rates Luis Enrique highly, then you can bet Daniel Levy's going to listen to that.
Dan, Roberto De Zerbi, instant success at Brighton. Can he jump straight up and become a Spurs superstar, do you think?
Yeah, I'm increasingly coming around to this idea, I have to say. I think the case against Pochettino, and I think there are a lot of reasons to really like the idea of Poch coming back, and I do really like it. But I think the case against him is that Spurs should really be trying to find the next Pochettino. You know, that they should be trying to do what they managed to do in 2014 and appoint, you know, a coach who, you know, really has that fire in his belly and something to prove and is on the way up. And we don't know whether the best years of Pochettino are still ahead of him or behind him, but you know, it's pretty clear with De Zerbi that, you know, he's going to have a great career in the game. And I think, you know, that there's a lot to like about him. He's come to England. Jonathan Lew did a great piece in The Guardian this week about his style of play being almost unique, very disruptive. He's almost come up with a way of countering pressing and exploiting teams that overcommit in the press. He plays really attacking football. He improves players. And he's got that kind of force of personality and that charisma that Pochettino had. And Adam Lallana, actually, who was immediately won over by Poch at Southampton, has said how De Zerbi won him over in half an hour at Brighton. I think Lallana would be a great interview just on the similarities and differences between Pochettino and De Zerbi. And you could see the way he took control of that Brighton dressing room almost immediately, got rid of Trossard, who was their joint top scorer at the time, who was being disruptive and wanted to leave and was causing him trouble, and just said, well, off you go then. And they haven't suffered for it at all. Again, pretty similar to what Poch did when he came in at Spurs and dispensed with the senior players who weren't following his way pretty quickly. So there's a lot to like about De Zerbi. You know, we've seen what happens at Chelsea when a manager steps up from Brighton, which is the best structured club in the Premier League, to a big club that isn't as well structured. That is a concern. You know, Graham Potter was in a meticulously designed structure at Brighton, and then he went to Chelsea and it was very different. And they tried to recruit people from Brighton, but you know, it's obviously taken a long time to work. You know, would the same thing happen to De Zerbi? I'm not sure. But I like him. People might say it's too soon, but you know, if Spurs don't try for him this summer, you know, he might be at Liverpool in, you know, next October. So, you know, there's certainly a compelling case for him. And if Spurs are thinking we don't want Poch because we want the next Poch, then I think he's the best candidate out there.
Just on De Zerbi, well, it speaks to your final point there, Dan, is I really do think this guy will soon be in charge of one of the biggest clubs in Europe. So there is an element of, if you get a chance to get him, you've got to be quick about it, because he is winning over so many people around European football. And your argument about there not being any win now managers anymore, well, you could argue maybe he is, with the way he's coming straight into Brighton and taking them to another level. I love the way first of all, he doesn't stand for any nonsense. You might reference the Trossard situation, but he's willing to make huge calls straight away. I mean, this may have gone unnoticed to people who don't support Brighton, but he dropped Rob Sanchez, the goalkeeper, just out of nowhere in the last couple of games to play Jason Steele, who's had hardly any Premier League experience, just because he feels he fits his system better. It doesn't seem to have made much difference from a results point of view. He doesn't make any excuses. You know, he's had issues with players either not leaving, like the Trossard situation or the Caicedo affair. His ability to handle those situations and to put the sort of club first is really impressive. And it makes you think that, all right, Harry Kane is another level and he's a very unique player in terms of what he means to Tottenham. But whoever comes in next is likely to is going to have to deal with that one way or another. I very much doubt that it will be, well, I'd be surprised if it was resolved by the time the new manager came in. So that would give me a lot of confidence that he would be able to deal with that, whatever the outcome of that situation is. And I went to do the pre-match press conference ahead of this evening's game, which I'm also going to head to later on, Brighton versus Crystal Palace. I went to the press conference on Tuesday, and one of the things I really liked, and I think Tottenham fans would really like about him, given how Conte has constantly downplayed reaching the Champions League, saying it was a miracle last year, saying this season it's going to be even harder despite, you know, the way the league table looks. De Zerbi was asked about the prospect of them, Brighton, making the Champions League this season, because Caicedo and Adam Lallana, as you pointed out there, Dan, have both suggested it could be a possibility. And he didn't downplay it at all. He said, "It's great to dream. It makes me proud that my players are speaking in this way." And he was also asked, "You know, do you really think that Brighton are on the same level of Tottenham and of Liverpool, you know, contenders for the Champions League?" And he said, "Yes, but obviously the game is there to prove it." But just the way he speaks is so positive that I really think that fans would connect. Back to that connection point that Tom made, I think fans would connect with him very quickly. And it's also just really impressive how quickly he's taken to English. Because I remember doing his first press conference when he took over, and it wasn't great, and unsurprisingly so. And already his handle is very impressive. So he definitely ticks a lot of boxes.
I was just about to jump in and make the point you've just made about his rhetoric and the way he encourages Brighton to dream. Again, it reminds me of Pochettino. It's exactly the kind of thing Spurs need again. You know, Conte's got a lot of qualities, and you know, we have to give him credit for last season, I think, in particular. But my God, if he keeps saying that finishing fourth in this Premier League is like winning the title, I'm going to start pulling my hair out, because it's really not. With Harry Kane in your side and Liverpool and Chelsea absolutely tanking, it's about par for Spurs. It's what they did last year as well. So, a manager who's prepared to be bullish about expectations and give fans a bit of optimism instead of constantly kind of downplaying the club's chances, as Mourinho did before him, would be a real welcome change.
I guess the one thing to say about De Zerbi, if you had an asterisk, is it's just, I think Tottenham would ideally want one more season to look. And that's the thing. Pochettino had a half season with Southampton, then he had a full season. So he had a whole year and a half in the Premier League. And you sort of thought, well, that's two good seasons he's had there. De Zerbi, you sort of think he's had an almost full season. I really think Spurs would just love him to have one more year where no one else could touch him and just think, okay, let's see if Brighton can do it again, where they can keep it up. And then that would be ideal. So you're sort of taking the risk on a slight shortage of evidence, but ultimately these are the risks you take. You know, I mean, if he has another great year, then you can bet that, you know, someone else, maybe slightly more attractive even than Tottenham, will be there. Ultimately that's the kind of the leap they have to take. And if it comes off, then they'll reap the rewards.
I think that's a really good point from Tom, but I covered a lot of Brighton during the Graham Potter years. And whilst he did a fantastic job in taking it on from Chris Hughton, developing the style of play, and the club that he left to join Chelsea were in a very good position. I mean, it's not just the manager and what he'd done, but obviously the club is fantastically well run. So De Zerbi was picking up something that was going in a very good, a very exciting direction anyway. But it's how quickly, having watched so many Graham Potter performances where they dominated possession but didn't really have much of a cutting edge, and it wasn't just the fact that they had a lack of an elite striker up front, missing a lot of chances, although that did happen regularly. It was sort of just Potter's kind of style, to be honest, which I think is a fair criticism. And we've seen that at Chelsea. The way that De Zerbi's come in and just changed that so quickly, you just have to take your hat off to that. It's really impressive. And I think that beat would give me enough confidence already to overlook the idea of having to wait a bit longer to really see if he's the real deal.
And of course, Spurs can't really afford to wait a bit longer. If they're going to make the change, if Conte is going to leave in the summer, well, then obviously they'll have somebody in place. And even if De Zerbi's proving to be a huge success again next season, they'll have missed that opportunity. The one other name I want Tom B in particular to focus on is Marco. Can he provide the silver service that Spurs want after his up and down time in English football?
Yeah, Marco Silva's is another name in the this season where you've got to say he should be amongst if not the manager of the season. He's definitely in the conversation for having had an excellent season at Fulham. I imagine Tottenham fans would look at his career and particularly his time in England prior to Fulham and have question marks, and I think that's fair. I remember doing his first press conference when he took over at Fulham after they'd been relegated and Scott Parker had left, and it was all a bit doom and gloom. And I think there was a lot of question marks about even his appointment when Fulham were in the Championship, let alone Tottenham and where they are in the Premier League. And obviously back then, I think it was during the pandemic time, so it was all on Zoom. And the relentless questions, and fair questions to be fair, in that first press conference were, you know, have you learned from any mistakes in the past? Do you have something to prove, I suppose, was the recurring theme after what happened at Everton. And I guess kind of walking out on Watford as well. And he very much rejected that narrative and didn't feel like he did have anything to prove, which was interesting at the time, but kind of speaks to his own bullishness and his own self-belief. And then went on an absolutely fantastic season. I just talked about De Zerbi and the way he's transformed Brighton so quickly in terms of style of play. All right, Championship football is a different level, so you've got to give more credit to De Zerbi. But the way he changed Fulham from being a team that really struggled to create chances, all right, they did. It was the Premier League that they mainly struggled to create chances and get the best out of Mitrovic. And they're back in the Championship. But remember, Mitrovic went on this run of, was it 40-odd goals in the Championship, breaking all kinds of records. He played some fantastic football and he's just taken it, just carried it on up into the Premier League. The way he's transformed players like Tim Ream, who I remember doing interviews with a few years ago, thinking his time was up at Fulham and is now being arguably their best player this season, shows that he's able to work with younger players and older players alike. The Mitrovic transformation in particular has been really impressive, and maybe that might go potentially some way with Kane. I don't know about that, but he's definitely someone who is brave in the way he plays, has a lot of belief and does play attacking front foot football. And as I said, like this season at Fulham, he's been really impressive. It sounds like he may have a buyout clause. I'm not sure about that exactly. So that might give Tottenham a chance to nip in there. But at the same time, I understand why Tottenham fans might have reservations given his history at a similar level kind of club. And if anything, ironically, compared to De Zerbi, he's only really been here for the last 6 months. You do kind of feel with Silva that maybe they need to see a bit more evidence that there's sort of long-term sustainability with him before going for him.
Ironically, I think Silva, more than De Zerbi, needs to do another season. You know, I'm not a Fulham fan, but it's kind of frustrating me that he's seemingly not signing a new contract there. You know, they gave him a way back, you know, into management when I think he was a little bit down and out, and he's done a fantastic job this season. But I think clearly, you know, he should do another season with Fulham back in the Premier League, I think, and, you know, get some more of his signings in the summer and see, you know, see what they can do. I think a lot of Spurs fans would just not feel totally convinced if he was to come in the summer. You know, based on his history and, you know, even considering the way Fulham have played this year. And I guess, you know, if he did kind of refuse to sign a new deal at Fulham and sort of look to jump ship, then again, you've got the question of kind of loyalty and connection, I suppose, goes back to Tom's point earlier. So yeah, I'm not totally sold on Silva.
I don't know whether this is a fair point or not, really, given that Brighton are further down their journey than Fulham are. But this again is kind of a feather in De Zerbi's cap over Silva. Is it's been quite noticeable recently when João Paulinho has not been playing for Fulham. I think through suspension, they do seem to be a very different team, and they've struggled. Obviously, they got beaten by Arsenal at the weekend, where a lot of teams have done. But in other games, they really have missed him. He's got to be one of the signings of the season, one of the hidden gems from Sporting Lisbon, a player that really felt very much up Conte's street, actually, if they'd gone for him with this sort of aggression in midfield, who also has a great long-range shot on him. He's someone that I wonder if might be on the move further down the line. But compared to De Zerbi, when he's missed players, you know, whether it be Caicedo leaving him out after the transfer saga with Arsenal, or Trossard in the final days before he left, or Danny Welbeck, who I think to a lot of fans of other clubs, you know, sort of look on and think, is he still any good? But actually, even though he doesn't score goals, he's been fantastic for Brighton in the last couple of years. His ability to adapt when he's missing key players. McAllister, again, when he came back, you know, while they were waiting for him to come back from the World Cup, is, again, very impressive, albeit in a small sample, but I think still enough to be pretty impressed.
Okay, well, just to wrap things up, guys, in 30 seconds, I want you to give me your chosen name and also a prediction for Saturday at Southampton, which on the face of things looks to be a definite three-pointer. But we know what Spurs can be like away from home to supposedly lesser opposition. Tom Hayes, lead the way.
I think just listening there to talk about De Zerbi and Silva, I just sort of wonder, could Spurs be guilty of kind of overthinking here? Like, if you kind of took the emotion out of Pochettino, let's just pretend Pochettino was a manager of Napoli or Roma or something, and he took that team for 6 or 7 years to the Champions League final, to a title race, developed 2 or 3 players into being some of the most exciting players in Europe, then went to PSG and won the title there, coached Messi, etc. Would that be the kind of coach that Spurs would now be thinking, yes, we would love to have? Like, of course, like, he ticks so many boxes in that way, just purely on the sense of Pochettino as a coach and his CV. He ticks loads of the boxes that Tottenham exactly want. And that's before you take even into account the whole connection argument. I just wonder, when you start to kind of talk about Marco Silva, even De Zerbi, I slightly wonder, is it just kind of guilty of overthinking? You know, ultimately, is the kind of the obvious best appointment right in front of Tottenham's eyes? You know, I agree with Tom's point earlier. I think there are some really good options this summer. It's a much better market than it was a couple of years ago. And I think Tottenham could make the right choice. But I do think that the Poch is a very compelling candidate for all the reasons we've talked about.
Okay, one vote for Pochettino and the score at the weekend?
It's impossible to predict Tottenham, right? Every week they're a completely different team. I think they'll probably win 2-0. They've got a good record against Southampton.
Dan?
Yeah, I like what Tom was saying there about Poch. I think a big question is his relationship with Levy. I mean, it's portrayed as such a strength, and you know, Tombe's mentioned the book, and we've got those incredible passages in there about them kind of going whitewater rafting together and stuff. And but I think, you know, an obvious theme of Pochettino's first tenure was Levy being focused on the stadium, you know, not really having his eye on the team in the same way. And I think that was a huge advantage for Poch, because it meant he was basically able to and completely changed the culture of the entire club without interference from above. You know, he was just the man in control. But it also meant that he wasn't backed sufficiently in the market. So that those two, you know, that situation will be completely upended. You know, there's no stadium project, which might mean that, you know, particularly if there's a director of football in place, that Poch kind of has less control than he would like. But equally, he should get more backing in the market. So these things could balance themselves out. I'll also vote for Poch, for emotional reasons more than anything else. You know, I just like the idea too much.
And a win for Spurs at the weekend?
I don't do predictions. Yeah, there's no point.
Well, are you optimistic for the weekend? Can we push you that far?
Yes, but just as we said at the top of the show, there's just been so many times this season where you think it's a turning point and it just goes to pot the next game.
All right.
I like to think with one game a week now for the rest of the season, Spurs will turn it on and give Conte a good send-off, but I'm not totally convinced.
Well, Tom B, can we dare to push you for a prediction? And is it going to be a clean sweep for Pochettino, or are you going to thrust another name into the spotlight?
Yeah, 3-1 Spurs. Harry Kane scores a couple. I've seen quite a lot of Southampton, and I think they're in a real battle to stay up. And I think Tottenham, weirdly, the pressure's kind of come off. I don't know why. Maybe because everyone sort of realises that Conte is going to go. I quite fancy a win for Spurs. I make it a hat-trick for Poch. I won't really talk much more about that because we've already mentioned all that. I think De Zerbi and Tuchel are great point ideas as well. The only other person that I wanted to throw in the mix, because we haven't mentioned him yet, is Thomas Frank, who I think has done an absolutely fantastic job at Brentford. He's always fascinating to listen to in press conferences, gives really interesting but insightful answers. He really gives quite a lot when you're asking a question that, you know, so many times when you speak to a manager, they don't really give much away. And I really do feel like he does. I think he's got that force of personality. I think he's got just that positivity, which would be really, really welcome right now. And here's an idea for you. If Kane were to leave and Ivan Toney's not banned from here until forever, then I don't think he would be a bad replacement, because every time I see him play, he is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and he could bring the goalkeeper with him as well, which would be quite useful. Okay, well, Poch is the Tottenham way's big shout, although I've got to confess, he wouldn't get my vote as brilliantly as he did first time around. I've still got this little sneaky feeling based on that story I heard as a youngster when apparently he ran around in his garden pretending to be Jurgen Klinsmann in a Tottenham shirt, and the way that he was brusquely removed by Chelsea. I know it's Chelsea again, but that just suggests to me, if Spurs could get into the Champions League, that Thomas Tuchel is a proven winner. And as good as all these other young managers are, it's a gamble. We're all getting older. I don't think I can take any more gambles. I want a proven winner. And I'm reckoning that if Mourinho and Conte couldn't do it, then third time lucky with Tuchel. But we'll see. Dan Kilpatrick, Tom Barkley, Tom Allnut, thank you very much. Thanks to all of you for listening. Once again, if you're up to Southampton at the weekend, enjoy your day out. We'll be back next week to see how things have progressed both on and off the pitch. Do give us a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. We're on Twitter and Instagram at the Tottenham Way. Do follow us all on Twitter as well. I'm Marcus Buckland. As always, come on, you Spurs.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.